Do not fret because of evildoers. Be not envious toward wrongdoers, for they will wither quickly like the grass and fade like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust also in him, and he will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil doing. For evildoers will be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the land. Yet a little while and the wicked man will be no more, and you will look carefully for his place and he will not be there. But the humble will inherit the land and will delight themselves in abundant prosperity. The wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes at him with his teeth. The Lord laughs at him, for he sees his day is coming. The wicked have drawn the sword and bent their bow to cast down the afflicted and the needy, to slay those who are upright in conduct. Their sword will enter their own heart, and their bows will be broken. Better is the little of the righteous than the abundant of many wicked, than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord sustains the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the blameless, and their inheritance will be forever. They will not be ashamed in the time of evil, and in the days of famine they will have abundance. But the wicked will perish, and the enemies of the Lord will be like the glory of the pastures. They vanish like smoke, they vanish away. The wicked borrows and does not pay back, but the righteous is gracious and gives. For those blessed by him will inherit the land, but those cursed by him will be cut off. The steps of a man are established by the Lord, and he delights in his way. When he falls, he will not be hurled headlong, because the Lord is the one who holds his hand. I have seen the young, and now I am old. Yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, or his descendants begging bread. All day long he is gracious and lends, and his descendants are a blessing. Depart from evil and do good, so you will abide forever. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his godly ones. They are preserved forever. But the descendants of the wicked will be cut off. The righteous will inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouth of the righteous utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice. The law of his God is in his heart. His steps do not slip. The wicked spies upon the righteous and seeks to kill him. The Lord will not leave him in his hand or let him be condemned when he is judged. Wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you will see it. I have seen a wicked man, a violent man, spreading himself like a luxuriant tree in its native soil. Then he passed away, and lo, he was no more. I sought for him, but he could not be found. Mark the blameless man, and behold the upright. For the man of peace will have a posterity, but transgressors will be altogether destroyed. The posterity of the wicked will be cut off, but the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble. The Lord helps them and sustains them. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. The word of our Lord.
Thank you, Paul. Well, a year ago, I had no idea I would ever live in Nebraska. I didn't know very much about Nebraska. I had one old friend that happened to be living in Omaha. But other than that, if somebody asked me, name a famous person from Nebraska, I would have been hard-pressed. I could have come up with one. One name of somebody that was famous that I knew was from Nebraska. Anybody want to guess who I would have named a year ago? Warren Buffett. That's the guy I would have known was from Nebraska. Warren Buffett. Yeah. But because he's kind of famous, right? He's famous for as a successful investor. You know, you hear him talked about all the time as an example of successful long-term investor. Now, Warren Buffett, if you asked him, would probably tell you that he doesn't invest in stocks. He buys stocks, he owns stocks, but he doesn't invest in stocks, he invests in companies, right? Because some people, they try and buy and sell stocks as a commodity, right? And they try and buy them at the bottom of the trough and sell them at the top of the peak as the prices go up and down. They call that playing the market. That's not Warren Buffett's approach. He wants to invest in a company. He really just looks at the company and what's going to make it successful and profitable. And he buys stock in that company. And as long as the company is doing well, he doesn't really care too much about the stock price because he knows over time that's going to take care of itself. And you know, there's people that play the stock market, and some of them make a whole lot more money than Warren Buffett does in a given day or a given week. But over the long run, Buffett's strategy has proven extremely successful. I found this quote of his, which I thought was a good kind of summary of his strategy. He says, when we own, he's talking about his organization, when we own portions of outstanding businesses with outstanding managements, our favorite holding period is forever. Sound financial advice. There is one problem with that quote, though. Anybody notice what the problem with that quote is? It's that last word. You can't own a company forever, can you? I mean, a really good company that might still be around in 50 years, 100 years. You know, that's good enough for Warren Buffett. It's good enough for me. Might be around in 1,000 years, 10,000 years. I don't know. But not forever. So when you're really looking at things from an eternal perspective, this is still a short-term strategy. But I love the quote. So let's just change it a little bit. Let's take that, get rid of that word businesses and change it to organization here. And let's say instead of owning portions, we're invested in or we are stakeholders in. If we're stakeholders in an outstanding organization with outstanding management, our favorite holding period should be forever. Is there an organization that would fit with that? Is there some place that we can invest and get a return on our investment forever? There is, isn't there? God's kingdom, doing things God's way, that is fits this quote perfectly. I mean, can you think of a better organization than the kingdom of God? How about one with more outstanding management? And it's the only thing that we can hold on to and be part of forever. So that's kind of the lens that we're going to look at this psalm through this morning. We're going to look at Psalm 37 that Paul read for us. Thank you very much, Paul. It's a long psalm, isn't it? You can be honest about that. And it's a little bit repetitive. Did you notice that? It kind of seems like it's saying the same thing over and over again in just slightly different words. Okay, so there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, this is another one of those acrostic psalms, you know, that's based on the letters of the Hebrew alphabet that kind of break it up and make it more interesting if you're reading it in Hebrew, but that doesn't help us out. It doesn't help us out with the structure. This is also what's sometimes called a wisdom psalm. It means it's kind of like other wisdom literature. It reminds you a little bit of the book of Proverbs, reading that. So really, each of those kind of little phrases is made so that it can stand alone like a proverb. And so there are different ways of talking about truth. But you'll notice that the themes kind of cycle back. It kind of repeats itself a little bit in terms of what it's talking about. It doesn't follow a straight line story. The other thing about these wisdom psalms is they have some truths in them that are absolute truths, that are true all the time, no matter what. But they also have some things like the book of Proverbs that are just kind of general maxims about life, things that tend to be true. But you can probably find an exception now and then. So with all that in mind, we're not going to try and break this down phrase by phrase through all 40 verses this morning. We're going to look at the big themes, and we're going to highlight some of the verses that illustrate that. And then as you read the psalm, you're going to see those popping up in other verses that we're not looking at in as much detail. It starts out right away, kind of touching on the same thing that we looked at last week. If you were here last week, you'll remember we looked at Psalm 73, and we asked, what happens when the bad guys win? What do we do about this fact that sometimes the wicked prosper? And this is what David says. This is a psalm of David, by the way. In the first couple of verses, he said, do not fret because of evildoers. Be not envious toward wrongdoers, for they will wither quickly like the grass and fade like the green herb. He says, look, I get it. Right now, it looks like some of these guys that are doing things their own way instead of God's way are doing well. But you know how after a rainstorm you get all this green grass on that hill and it looks like it's doing being really healthy, and then it goes 2-3 days with no water in the hot desert sun? What happens? It's dead. That's what those guys are like. He says, don't worry about it. I'm going to show you a different way. And really the whole rest of the psalm is contrasting this way of the wicked, this way of doing things your own way versus doing things God's way. And David says we should do things God's way. And the summary of what it means to do things God's way, and I think the most important verse in this psalm is verse 4, Psalm 37, 4. In fact, when somebody asks me, anybody ever ask you what your favorite Bible verse is? I think that's kind of a weird question, but when people ask me that, and I feel like I should answer, this is the one I go to, Psalm 37, 4. I love this verse. It says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Delight yourself in the Lord. Find delight in the Creator God of the universe, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Do you like to get the desires of your heart? Do you like your heart's desires to be met? It's an awesome verse, isn't it? Now, unfortunately, this is one of those verses that sometimes gets taken out of context of the rest of Scripture and misunderstood, I'll say. I won't say twisted, because I think it's probably genuinely misunderstood by a lot of people. Because it kind of sounds like, and some people teach it like this, I've got these desires in my heart, you know. I desire to be, to have a happy family life. And I desire to have good physical health. And I desire to have a successful career. And, you know, I kind of desire that new boat. How am I going to get those desires? Oh, I just got to figure out how to delight myself in the Lord. If I can delight myself in the Lord, he can give me all those things that I want. That is not what David is saying here. You have to ask yourself, what does it mean to delight yourself in the Lord? You notice David doesn't say, offer sacrifices to the Lord, or obey the Lord's laws, or go to church, or pray enough. He says, delight yourself in the Lord. Delighting in the Lord is something you do with what? Your heart. If I am truly delighting myself in the Lord, it's going to change my heart. You could really translate this verse, set your heart on the Lord, and he will give you the desire of your heart. He'll give himself to you. See, we don't get our heart's desires by aligning God's agenda according to my desires. I get my heart's desire by aligning my desires according to God's agenda. When I delight myself in the Lord, when I set my heart on God, it changes what I want. It changes what I love. That's the only way to invest. You know, if I buy stock in a really well-run company, they're going to make money whether I own stock in that company or not, right? Like, they don't care if I own their stock. It doesn't affect them one bit. But if they're successful and they're profitable, I want to own that stock because it's good for me. You know, if I have some knucklehead high school buddy who has some harebrained scheme and wants a startup and he wants me to invest all my savings in his lame idea, I could give him all my money and I could work really hard to try and make that a successful company, but that's probably not going to work, right? That's not a good investment. We can't take the things that we want, that we like, that God says are bad ideas, that are they're perishing, they're failing, physical health, wealth, success, position, whatever you want to call it. We can't take those things and somehow turn them into good investments by being good Christians. But we can take the things that God says are good investments, that last forever, that pay eternal dividends, and we can choose to invest in those things instead. And that's the formula of Psalm 37. Skipping ahead a couple of verses, we see this theme come up framed slightly differently. Verses 8 and 9 says this. It says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil doing. David is saying that what God wants from us is to live a certain way, a way that rejects anger and wrath and leaves things to God, trusts him. And the contrast is verse 9. For evildoers will be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the land. Now you'll see those phrases a couple of times in this psalm, that the evil being cut off, the wicked being cut off, and the righteous, or people who do things God's way, inheriting the land. Now, David is not all that concerned about real estate here. The land is very important because David's talking to God's people who relate to God through a covenant. And the very centerpiece of that covenant is the land. That's the physical token of their right relationship with God. Now, wicked Israelites owned lots of land. In fact, they were pretty good at acquiring it through all kinds of dishonest means. But David's saying, ultimately, if their relationship with God isn't right, they're going to be cut off from that relationship with God and all the blessings that go with that, including the land. And it's the righteous, it's the people who do things God's way, who invest in their relationship with God, that ultimately are going to stay in right relationship with God through that covenant, which includes the land. He's saying invest wisely. There's only one place you can invest that's going to pay off in the long run. And it's not in real estate. It's in your relationship with the God who made the land, who gave the land, who controls the land, and everything else. Now, there's a degree to which we have to acknowledge that the wicked are seeing things the way they are, in that there is a payoff to wickedness in the short term. They're borrowing money and not paying it back. They're using violence to get what they want. And they're getting ahead sometimes. That's what we looked at last week with Psalm 73. They're not just dumb. They know what they're doing. But they overlook the critical importance of the relationship with God. And that's why David says in verses 16 and 17, he says, better is the little of the righteous. The righteous are doing things God's way. They have less right now. Better is the little of the righteous than the abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord sustains the righteous. Even the strength, even the ability to acquire wealth and prosperity from the wicked, that's going to be taken away from them eventually. But God is never going away, and God's got your back if you're doing things his way. The difference is the relationship with God. Now, before we get too puffed up in putting ourselves in the camp of the righteous, we have to recognize, first of all, that we are all in the same boat when it comes to starting our relationship with God. We're all morally bankrupt. All of us at some point have done something my way instead of God's way. And that's sin. And that puts us in God's debt to a degree that we can never pay him back. There's three general approaches for how to deal with that situation. One is sort of the sin management approach, right? Okay, I recognize that I can't ever really get square with God, but I'm going to try and keep my debt to him as low as possible and hope for the best. You know, so it's like if I have $1 million balance on my credit card, I'm never going to pay that off, but I'm going to keep making the minimum payment every month anyway, just so that they don't get too mad at me, hopefully. And I'm going to try not to use my credit card too much, because I know I can't pay it back, but I really like the idea of pretending that I have some control over my moral debt to God. That's one approach. It doesn't work. The wicked are really probably a little bit smarter, because they say, you know what? I can never get right with God, if there is a God. I'm never gonna make it on my own morally, so why bother trying? I'm gonna run that credit card up as fast as I can. I'm gonna take it everywhere, and I'm gonna do whatever I can to get whatever I want right now. And when the bill comes due, the bill comes due. I can't pay it anyway. That's the wicked approach. But the approach that David is proposing here in 37, the approach of the righteous, isn't just about managing our debt. It's about merging with God. See, God has invited us not only to let him pay our debt off for us. That's what he did when he sent Jesus to live a sinless life and die in our place and rise again. And that's the first step. If you haven't taken care of that this morning, that's priority number one. Talk to me, talk to somebody. You've got to get that initial debt dealt with. But God's offer doesn't end there. He doesn't just say, I'll pay off your debt and give you a clean slate and hand you back the moral credit card and say, go do better this time. He says, no, you can merge with me. My assets become your assets. My interests become your interests. That's what it means to be part of the kingdom of God, to be a real follower of Jesus. And he says, come be part of the eternal kingdom that lasts forever. But you know what some of us do? We say, thanks for the offer, I'm good. Thanks for paying off the credit card. And we walk out and we keep trying to do things our own way. And what we're left with is nothing. You know, the Apostle Paul compares it to escaping a burning house. And everything's burned up and you barely survive. That's what it's like if you take that forgiveness, but you never invest in doing things God's way. There's a better way. We can invest in God's kingdom. And there's real benefits to that. You know, when we invest in God's kingdom, it's not just about suffering now and putting up all with all this misery now, and then someday God will pay you off. God's way is designed to live a blessed life now, but a life that lasts forever. Remember what Jesus said the two great commandments are that summarize everything God tells us to do. Love God and love other people. Basically, God's way is about prioritizing relationships. And we see that here in verses 25 and 26, the real value of relationships. When we do things God's way, it promotes healthy, beneficial relationships. So this is what David says. He says, I've been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging bread. All day long he is gracious and lends, and his descendants are a blessing. Now this is one of those general truths, right? David was a righteous man and he spent some time forsaken begging bread. He knows that this isn't 100% true, but he's saying as a general rule, when I look out over the long haul, righteous people don't end up in this situation. Why is that? Is it because God makes sure that all their business deals are profitable? No. Does the famine skip over their field and just hit the wicked? No. But they're generous. They're gracious. They lend freely. And they teach their children to do the same. And so what happens when they're in trouble? There are people there. There are relationships there that care for them, that take care of them. You don't even have to be a Christian to understand the importance and value of relationships. Secular psychologists and sociologists have done studies. The number one indicator of happiness is the quality of relationships in your life and the number of quality relationships. That's way more significant than material wealth or what kind of job you have or any of that. If you have good relationships, which you will almost always have if you do things God's way, you're going to be happier. I've heard it said, and I think this is probably a fair way to put it, that folks who are homeless, who end up out on the street, not because they want to be there, but because they have no other choice, they don't end up out on the street because they've run out of money. They end up out on the street because they've run out of relationships. They've run out of relationships. And that may be because they've abused those relationships, or it may be that they were just unfortunate enough to not have them to begin with. But you don't end up in that situation if you have a relationship with somebody that's there ready to take you in. God is the relationship that matters most. And ultimately, what we can say about that homeless person is true of any wicked person. They run out of relationships. They get to the end of their life, and they don't have relationship with God. And they're left alone and without that comfort, without that help. And that's really the difference. They prioritize their immediate desires over the long-term relational health with God. David's focus throughout this psalm on what really distinguishes the righteous from the wicked is their relationship with God. God is the one who helps them when they stumble. God is the one who supports them. God is the one who prospers them. It's not about what they get right here and now. It's about that relationship that is here and now and on into eternity. And he wraps up the psalm this way in verses 39 and 40. He says, but the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. Doing things God's way is the only path to lasting joy. It's the only way to experience joy, not only now, but into eternity. There's no other pursuit that brings lasting joy. And I believe that. And chances are, if you're here this morning, you probably believe that too. But I don't always do things God's way, do I? Why is that? I mean, if I really believe that doing things God's way is the only path to lasting joy, why would I ever do things my own way? You ever wonder that? See, I think the problem is we have this problem with instant gratification versus delayed gratification. Because God's way always leads to lasting joy, but it doesn't always lead to immediate pleasure or comfort or ease, right? Sometimes God says, wait. Sometimes God's way is hard and painful. And my way seems a lot better right now in this moment. Psychologists do a test with young kids sometimes called the marshmallow test. They take a child, maybe like a five-year-old, and they put him in a room alone with a marshmallow, and he says, this is your marshmallow. You can eat it whenever you want. It's yours. But before you eat it, just know that I'm going to come back in 15 minutes, and if that marshmallow is still here, I'm going to give you another one. So you're going to have one marshmallow now or two marshmallows in 15 minutes. Now, a few kids, they don't even care. They just pop the marshmallow right in their mouth. But most of them like the idea of getting two marshmallows in 15 minutes. As you can imagine, though, as a five-year-old, waiting 15 minutes for that second marshmallow is hard. And most of them don't make it. I think for us as Christians, life is one big marshmallow test. Right? God says, I promise you lasting joy, peace and harmony with me and other people that you love through all of eternity. And you can invest in that kingdom every single day. You can enrich that experience every single day by doing things my way. But we see that shortcut, the chance to not be generous with someone in need, keep it for ourselves, the chance to be rude to someone who's annoying us, and it gives us that instant feeling of power and control. Whatever it is, and it's hard to resist right there in that moment. God's calling us to trust him for delayed gratification. And it really is all about trust. You know, they studied the kids who do well on this test, the ones who make it to the end or almost to the end, typically are kids who come from stable homes where there's a lot of trust from adults, where when adults say something's going to happen, it's going to happen, and they not just in their head, but in their heart, they believe that that second marshmallow is going to be there, and it makes it easier to hold on. Kids from less stable homes don't do so well on this test. They've had adults make promises that have been broken. They might believe with their head that the second marshmallow is coming, but really on a heart core level, they don't really trust it. That's why trust is so important. It's what our kids are learning about. It's not just about trusting God with our salvation, but it's about trusting what God says is good. Do you believe that God's good for you is better than your good for you? Do you believe that God's way is the only path to lasting joy? That's a question we got to ask ourselves this week. As we head out into the world this week, the marshmallow of sin is going to be right there. There's going to be an opportunity to do things, maybe not something particularly wicked or evil, but just easier and more comfortable than what Jesus would want you to do. And you're going to have a choice. I can do that and make my life a little bit easier, a little bit happier right now, or I can invest in the kingdom that lasts forever. How are you going to invest this week? Consider that as we sing our next couple of songs.
This time we'll invite the ushers to come forward as we continue our worship through a time of giving.